Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
This is the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, and I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of the Reasonable Voice and the Reasonable Voices working together on our Blog Talk Radio shows is connecting the dots between politics and finance, a need for education, humanity and world peace, and the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination for equality opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world, embracing creativity and political unity as solutions. My guest today, I'm really glad to be talking to again. She is the president of the National Organization of Women in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and her name is Diana Igazquiu. Did I get it close, Diana?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, very good. Well, welcome to the show, Diana.
Thank you.
I, in your position as the Virginia president of NOW, there are a lot of issues. It's unending, of course, for women, ERA and equal rights, equal opportunity, equal pay. So where do we start? What about Medicaid expansion, which is not exclusively a women's issue, but Medicaid expansion or the fight over it in Virginia?
Well, in Virginia, it's kind of paralyzed at this point. Everybody's trying to find new ideas. The Republicans have run out of arguments against it. They still keep saying that if the government goes bankrupt, they'll be stuck with this program. Well, if the government goes bankrupt, we're all in trouble no matter what.
Yes.
You know, just because of Medicaid, it's an issue that will affect all of us in our own pocketbooks, the United States going bankrupt. I don't even want to think about that.
Mm.
But Medicaid is most important to women in the state because it affects mostly single women who have children, who've been divorced, whose husbands don't support them. And also 75% of all minimum wage jobs are held by women.
Mm.
So we don't have health insurance and minimum wage jobs. We need the Medicaid expansion desperately in order to take care of the families. The Republicans say they are for families, but if you're against Medicaid expansion, you're against families.
Exactly. Everyone knows I'm a liberal, and I'm certainly well left of center, but I do try to reach out to the other side, especially as a radio host, but sometimes I just don't, for instance, I interviewed once a very charming head of the Republican Party in Albemarle County, and she was wonderful, She made a couple of comments. I mean, a delightful person and a great guest and extremely informative, but she made a comment more than once during the interview that we're always cast as the bad guys. And I try to defend Republicans as much as I can. I think I find a tremendous issue with Republican leadership on the state level, certainly in Virginia's General Assembly, and on the federal level, in the Congress, especially in the House, but not just the House. So I know we can't speak for them, obviously, but what's behind this? Is it just, what the media says, the Koch brothers are paying them off or something? I mean, what's behind the philosophy that we must block the voting rights for people, we must prevent Medicaid for those less fortunate, Medicare for all is not a good idea? Got to be a question in there somewhere. I'm just trying, from your point of view and your position and your advocacy, How do you come up with a rational explanation for what you are constantly, the headwinds that are constantly in your face?
Well, there are reasonable Republicans still around in Virginia, and I
yes.
know who they are, you know, so I can approach them, and they will partner with us on certain issues, but they run into to the problem that if they do too much with what the Tea Partiers or the really far-right Republicans feel are the enemy,
yes.
and that's how they count us.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to work with Republicans because when you can get more done that way, they can talk to their friends.
Yes.
But it's very hard, and I don't, you know, why they do that? This is Virginia, and what I run into with a lot of Republican men in accordance with the ERA and
mm-hmm.
some of the women's issues like equal pay
yeah.
or minimum wage, it's a patriarchy society. They think that they're taking care of women, and that I kind of feel sometimes like they think we're dumb
yeah.
or that we're property.
Yes.
And they're still back there somewhere. But if you talk to young men outside who haven't come into politics yet, who want to run, they will, you know, if you talk to them about the ERA, they'll say, well, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And I keep trying to tell them they need to be talking to the other men.
Yes. Yes.
Older men who still have these, who still have their post in the legislature or in the national government, and they need to talk to them and say, you know, we're not there. You need to be changing.
You know, exactly, because there is a lot of talk of trying to modernize or change or accept certain realities of the demographics in America as well as in Virginia, but still there is that hardcore, what I call the gray hairs, of men, white men in particular. You know, I'm one of them, even though I don't agree with them, but still... They are ensconced in political positions, but you know, Rob Bell is no kid, and he's certainly no old white-haired guy. But some of the times, the things that
he's very far right.
Yeah,
very right.
I've never interviewed him on the show, but I have had a conversation with him, and I can remember even the first time we spoke, I just felt a disconnect, and it wasn't about politics. It was a personal question about Virginia and how we stand and what we're going to do. But it wasn't politics. I purposely didn't want to confront him politically. It was the first time I was meeting him, and I just felt he was either not hearing me or he just didn't get what I was trying to say, or. And in addition to that, he kept trying to pass me off to, he would say, well, who's your representative? Who's your representative? That's who you should be talking to. So I don't...
Yeah, exactly. I say this with all sincerity that my own, I live in Fredericksburg,
uh-huh.
but Bill Howell is the Speaker of the House, and
yes.
he's from Fredericksburg.
Yes.
And he is on the board of ALEC.
Yeah.
ALEC is owned by the Koch brothers, and he gets PAC money. His whole PAC is from the Koch brothers.
Well,
so all of the representatives in this area and anyone he likes in Virginia do not have to dial for dollars.
Yeah.
So they don't answer to the constituents at all.
But see,
so you can call them what I say, K-O-C-H, the Koch whores.
Yeah.
Because that's where they get their money from.
And
it's very sad because they have bought Virginia government.
And, you know, every time I try not to believe that and try to find some other avenue, evidence, it's just there. It's in your face. They're not trying to hide it even for the most part. It's pretty blatant.
They, when you're talking to them, they smirk. They just don't have to listen to you. And some of the worst ones are the Tea Partiers.
Yes.
And every time I have watched them, the Republicans in the House, where the bills pass to each House,
mm-hmm.
They've given Republican senators really hard times.
Yes.
Because they might be too moderate for them. And it's really sad to watch. They won't listen to anything. The first question out of their mouths, whether it has to do with money or not, is, oh, how is this going to cost us? My constituents don't want to hear that they're going to have to pay for this. Well, it might just be some common sense bill. It doesn't have to pay for anything.
Yeah. Gee. And also, it is a truth. I mean, it is a fact that in most areas, I'm not certain that Virginia actually falls into this category, but perhaps you can tell me. But I know in most conservative-dominated states where there is the greatest resistance to social issues and social programs that help the less fortunate, or for that matter, I think we need to wake up. The less fortunate is not some small minority anymore. There are a lot of people out of work and a lot of people, well, you know, working two and three jobs to support their families and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
especially women.
Yeah, especially women and women of color. So, you know, let's get real about who it is we're trying to help with social programs. But it is.
And they don't like to say this, but most people on welfare or any government program are white.
Yes, exactly. And that was what I was getting to. Many of the people who are complaining and voting against such programs are living in the conservative-dominated states that received most of that funding. So it's the old thing of the liberals in California are paying for the social programs in the South, and the South is voting against people like the liberals in California who are voting for the
money back.
Exactly.
And so, it's very sad. And the saddest part is that I don't know if you were at the Medicaid hearing that the Senate had last week.
No.
2 weeks ago.
Yes, but I wasn't there. No.
2 weeks ago on Tuesday. The Americans for Prosperity hired buses and brought people in to talk at the hearing.
Yes.
Well, the senators had invited 30 people before citizens could talk. You know, experts from business, everything else of how Medicaid would affect it.
Yes.
So they didn't put a time limit on them. So it was. The hearing started at 2, it was going to end at 6. It was 4:15 or 4:30 almost by the time that the people that they had invited finished speaking. So the Koch brothers had hired these busloads of people to come. I don't know if the people got paid. But the overwhelming majority of these people, they put green T-shirts on them with Americans for Prosperity. They were older Virginians who are on Medicare.
Yes.
Talking against Medicaid.
Yes.
You know, they just don't understand that they're refusing a program that they find they have to have to people who need it also.
Yes.
And they don't understand that they're wearing T-shirts paid for by money that's against them. And then they'll spout this one woman told me, oh, she was against corporations owning everything in the United States, and I'm like, you're wearing a green T-shirt.
Yes, with Americans for Prosperity.
You know, these people have bought you.
Yeah. How do we, because that you really nailed it, I couldn't agree more, I write this very same thing all the time, how then do we, because the problem is I often say you can't win somebody over if you call them stupid,
no.
So you have to start somewhere else. And it isn't stupid, it's a lack of information or misguided, or you've been sold a bill of goods, whatever. But how do you bridge that gap if someone can stand up before a Republican presidential candidate and say, keep your hands off I don't want the government having their hands on my Medicare. Well, you know, how do you, what do we do? What do we do?
Well, one of the problems is people on Medicare goes directly into their checking account.
Yes.
Used to be that they got that government check and they knew it was a government program. I don't think they even know that anymore.
That's true.
Because I was at a hearing that Mark Warner had, you know, just in the Fredericksburg area. He came to have this is when they were trying to pass the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
And it was stuffed with people with signs saying, keep your hands off my Medicare.
I know.
Or my Medicaid. And so he was hearing these questions from people, and we were all looking at each other like, oh, my God, what are these people talking about? And at the very, toward the very end, he said, how many people in this room are on Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security? 3/4 of the room raised their hand.
Of course.
And he goes, do you realize that those are government programs? Those people actually booed him off the stage.
Yes.
He had to leave.
See, and that's it. That they don't... I don't want to say they, but I've seen and heard similar experiences like that, where when the truth is given, I mean, what does he have to gain by lying that it's a government program? It is a government program, and it doesn't take a lot of research to find that out. It's not a secret. But when you are booed for the truth, or even back to the last Republicans on the debate stage, and the military, the veteran, not veteran, he was actually still serving, happened to be gay. He calls in and asks about that, and the audience boos him, and he's fighting for what they call our freedom. They say, you know,
yeah,
that,
they would never go over there themselves.
Exactly. Nor the people
being
who send
retired
it.
Military. It just rankles me that, you know, they're not willing. They yell about how much they're paying the service members. Well, these people are putting their lives on the line.
Exactly.
And then if they get killed, their widows and children don't make much money.
Exactly.
So it's you know, we just have priorities are mixed up in this country. I think the only way, and I think the Democrats make a very big mistake, John Dean had the right, when he was head of the Democratic Party,
uh-huh.
he had the right idea to spend the money, not on elections, but send it out and hire people to go start the conversations everywhere. And the Dems did so well during that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Rahm Emanuel didn't like that when he got into the White House as the chief of staff. He made sure that he ended that, you know. He got a new head of the Democratic Party, and that was... off. And I keep telling the Dems in the state that you're never going to get the votes outside what they call the Golden Crescent, from the north all the way down to Norfolk, just mm-hmm. running along the top part.
Yes.
That's where the money and the people are, granted. But you have to spend your money sending people out into the rest of Virginia and starting the conversation, because all they have out there are Republican newspapers and Republican Tea Partiers elected and talking to them,
mm-hmm.
and you also have radio stations that only have Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and all the rest of the talking heads.
Yes.
And so you get no other information, and then you watch Fox. So what do you think is going to happen?
Well, exactly. You've hit it. But when you're only getting one half of the conversation, or one point of view, and it seems to be getting more and more extreme, it's hard to not see why so many don't see. I mean, booing a senator off the stage because he tells you the truth, it's especially a truth that is so public, that Medicare and Medicaid are government programs, and they are for people like the people who are screaming loudest against them. All right, well, you mentioned earlier and that Medicaid recipients are primarily women, and I want to just sort of piggyback on that before we go to a break, or maybe we'll have to come back to it after a break. But I want to also throw out one of my pet peeves that I say to men all the time when they think the Equal Rights Amendment, first of all, they think it's passed. Well, it passed Congress, but it does have to be ratified by, is it 38 states? 38 states, and we've got 3 to go. But more to my point before we take a break, and we'll come back and hear what you have to say about it, the ERA has not been ratified, therefore it is not an amendment to the Constitution. But my point is, it's not just for women. It states clearly, and even not considering the actual text, a very short text of the proposed amendment, ERA. If you have your mothers, sisters, sister-in-laws, wives, daughters, and in your life, and you are concerned about their economic future or their future period, then as a male, you can't think of ERA as something against you or separate from you. It is for you. So if your wife is bringing home a salary, how can you say it shouldn't be equal to yours and she shouldn't be equal to you? Anyway, I know you're going to hold that thought. We're just going to take a quick break, everyone, but we'll be right back, and we're going to hear more from Diana, the president of NOW in Virginia, and we're going to talk about ERA and anything else we feel like it, including Mark Cole. We'll be right back. Stay with us. To the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, and continuing with my wonderful guest, Diana Igazkiw, who is the Virginia president of NOW, National Organization of Women. We're talking about the Commonwealth. We don't think all Republicans are bad. We don't think that at all. As a matter of fact, I really do believe, except for maybe some Tea Partiers I've had experiences with, both on the media and in the media and on the street, but for the most part, I think there still are a lot of Republicans who are for human decency, human kindness, fairness, equality of opportunity. I just think, however, the people like the Koch brothers have so plummeted, or that's not the word, so imposed or piled on money into convincing federal and state and local conservatives into pushing an agenda that is really, in my opinion, very anti-American. What do you think, Diana?
Yes, I would agree with that. Too much of it is. I mean, it comes to mind, they actually have paid for school board members in upper Wisconsin.
Wow.
In a 7,000-person town, it's just getting ridiculous.
Yeah. If you can't win at the ballot, you have to buy it before it gets there, I guess. But let's do now turn to ERA, and where are we in Virginia, or where are we in getting the three more states we need to ratify?
Well, we're still at three more states.
Yeah.
We have been for years. The Republicans, even especially in Virginia, say the ERA is dead, that we're past the time limit, but many, many people, and even the Congressional Research Service has said that, no, it's not historically. They've accepted seven different amendments back that came in long, long after their time limits were up, and including habeas corpus.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's there. It can be done. There's a group, the Progressive Democrats of America, put up a bill to take away the time limit, and they're getting more people on board with that. In Virginia, we have tried, Virginia NOW started 7-8 years ago trying to revive it here. It took us 3 years to even convince the Democrats to put it up bills in the legislature. We've gotten it through the Senate 4 times now. In the House, it has come back. It gets a hearing. The first year it got a hearing in the House, too. They tabled it.
Mm.
And Bob Bell was one of the people that tabled it, because he's on that subcommittee at the time.
Yes.
Then they wouldn't hear it for a couple years. Mr. Cole, my own personal representative here from Fredericksburg, is the head of the Privileges and Elections Committee. He told me that we were a political ploy of the Democrats, and he was not going to hear this bill.
Oh, my God.
And then when it comes back from the Senate, each time he doesn't hear it. This legislative session, he had to hear it because, just like we had done before, we flooded the telephones.
Yes.
With people calling saying they wanted the ERA. But so many of those people from out of state that they don't pay attention to them. They ask them their address so they know whether they're in-staters or out-of-staters.
Yes.
But he had to hear it because the other people on the committee, their phones were just getting tied up all day.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to hear it, table it, and said again that it was dead. They always say that. That's nothing new and different. And last year, they put, not this past session, but session before, they did put it in a different committee, the House Rules Committee, which Mr. Howell, the Speaker, is the head of, because it's where bad boys go to die, and he wanted me to go away and not come back.
Yeah.
And they tabled it then, too. And the first person to say table it was the only woman on the committee, which was a Republican.
I know.
And, yes. She doesn't have a seat anymore, but that's not because she did that. But, yes, they don't pay attention. They don't want this. They say it's dead, but I know what they're paid by businesses not to raise minimum wage, not to raise any wages, period. So it's just what they're there for.
You know,
that's another thing I keep telling women is, we will keep fighting this, but unless you get out there and fight to elect other people that are on, de-elect, unelect these people that are vote against it, make them pay.
Yes.
But you have to get out there and work. You can't sit home. Just a telephone call or an email is not going to do anything. You actually have to go talk to your neighbors.
I couldn't agree more. I can remember one of my numerous trips to the Hill. I had congressmen. There was a no labels conference once I went to, as a matter of fact, and they had maybe a dozen sitting and former members of Congress, and every one of them said, when we get these petitions where people have clicked a mouse online and, they send us the same thing, we don't pay any attention to that. And so I, among others, asked the question, well, what is it that gets your attention? They made it clear there was no hesitation. When people care enough to pick up the phone and call us, or better yet, come to the office, they estimate that one face in their office asking them about something equals 1,000 votes. They actually gave me that number, 1,000 votes.
And you know what I found this time? Some women that I met that were there to protest the vote against SB 510, which was the bill that would have taken guns away from domestic abusers.
Yes, and I want to get to that too.
The Senate had passed it 29-5, it was bipartisan, and the rest of the Republicans didn't want to vote against it, but they didn't want to vote for it, so they sat on their hands.
Mm.
And they voted it, tabled it immediately in the House. So these women from Mothers Against Guns came, and some of them said to me, and I had not realized this before, and I guess we have to get the word out, that they didn't know they could come in the building and talk to them.
Oh, my God. That's a very good point. But
yes,
you can.
Do not realize that these people are there to hear them.
Exactly.
And they can walk in any time when they're there, but you have to remember, they're only there January and February. That building's not open other times.
Yes.
The bottom floor is open for meetings. That's about it. But you can call them in your district, find their number, and call them up. Or the thing that they pay attention to also is a handwritten letter.
Yes.
Not an email, which people do not send anymore.
Yes.
And if you write a handwritten letter, it will go to the top of the pile of everything.
Well, that's an important thing. If we've said nothing else in this interview today, I hope everyone hears that. So let's get back to the cursive and write a letter. It doesn't even have to be long. Perhaps the shorter the better. But you want to get their attention. But I think the biggest point that Diane has just made, and I've thought of that in the past, but she made it today, and that is both at the Virginia Assembly state level and at the federal level, these people work for us despite what the Kochs are trying to do. They work for us, and when you make a telephone call or a handwritten letter, as Diana says, or show up and ask a question, they pay attention, because no matter what the party, the number one priority I find with any politician, regardless of party, sex, or age, is to get reelected. And when you got a number of people coming in speaking, on an issue that they feel very strongly about, you get their attention, and they want your vote. And that's our part.
Forget your friends to go with you.
Yes.
They don't have to speak if they don't want to, but just stand behind you.
Exactly.
And say, these are my friends. We are here to talk to you. Go to their office. confront their secretary, make an appointment, go to the Virginia.gov has their telephone numbers for everybody. Call on the telephone. Yeah. A lot of times they'll answer the phone.
Exactly. I went up with a group, and we must have been maybe a dozen or so, and that's not doesn't seem like a large number, but it does when a dozen people knock at the door and walk into a congressman's or state assemblyman's office and say we'd like to see the member, and because we have a petition or a question or we want some attention to this, even if you don't get to the person, and by the way, congressmen have come out of their offices when they see those numbers and sat down and talked with us, and they certainly do it on the state level. It gets the attention, and that's Americans' power. I think we think we've lost it because, of course, people like us talk about what the Koch brothers are doing and what the Republican leadership is doing and busing in people. How do you fight that? Well, as you said,
you
Diana,
you take your own friends and you say to them, "I am your constituent."
Yes. Yes, that's the phrase. I am your constituent, and then you say and present, and as you say, not everybody has to talk. It's better if they don't. Have one spokesperson, but if you got, 10, 12, 15 people standing behind you, or even six, you've made an impression.
Yeah.
Okay. I do want to get back and talk about this a bit more because not many people know about it. It was on my list today, and you've already mentioned it. Another issue that is certainly predominantly a woman's issue, but everyone should be listening, and that is the SB 510 that you mentioned to get the guns out of the hands of convicted domestic abusers. And there was even a time limit on how long they couldn't have a gun, right?
5 years.
5 years. So some guy beats up a woman in his life. He's convicted of that. And when he comes out, SB 510 says he can't have a gun for 5 years. Tell us the good, bad, and the indifferent about that. Why?
Well, I mean, the gun rights people say, oh, take guns away. But it's not forever.
Yes.
And in Virginia, they found that 60.5% of all intimate partner homicides, the victims were killed with a firearm.
Yes.
And 76% of them were stalked before they ever were killed.
Wow.
And women are stalked more often than men. And Virginia doesn't have very good stalking laws. They just started a couple years ago. But it's just the basic stuff. I've had women call me of things that have been happening to them, and they practically have to prove that they're stalked. I had one woman who a video was put up that she had no idea that this guy had taken of her in the nude.
Oh, geez.
And he put it up on Facebook. And she got Facebook to take it down, but because she got it taken down, the judge said we couldn't see it, so he didn't believe her.
Oh my
God. So he wouldn't find against it for her in court. You know, it's just the amazing things. But women, are abused constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And this one would have just taken away guns for 5 years because the chances of her being killed by a gun are much more than a knife. A knife you probably can, most of the time, you can heal from.
Mm-hmm.
But a gun, more than likely, you're not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, women are, very few men get abused or stalked.
Yes.
By women.
Yes.
Of stalking maybe, but not abused physically.
Yes. And it's, it's like rape. Women get raped, and yet the burden of proof too often is that they have to explain how they didn't justify it by something they did or something they said or what they're wearing. And it's like, excuse me, what does that have to do with the fact that if someone says no and you do it anyway, then why is the woman at fault? Just too many. And again, I think this all comes back to if we can just see our way. I'm not saying necessarily that the ERA is the answer for everything, even for women. But my point is, if you have a constitutional law of the land umbrella about the equality of your sex with the other sex, then you can go to that And that umbrella helps you when you are in a court battle or an argument with a law enforcement or with in the courts or whatever. You have a position that has some protection. And again, we must mention, as bad as things are for women, as in white women, they are worse for black women, Hispanic women, Asian women, whether it's equal pay or the need for Medicaid. It still falls more heavily. It falls more heavily on women than men, but it falls more heavily on women of color than white women. Anything on that you want to add?
Well, actually, there's 3 equal pay days. We just passed the one in April for white women.
Uh-huh.
There's one next month for black women, and in June for Chicano, Latino women.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's different women. White women are, on average, are 77 cents. Black women are 67 cents, and Latinas are 57 cents. And that's just across the United States. Different areas have different. I mean, if you live in North Dakota where the oil shale is, you make 99 cents to every dollar a man makes. But, and if you're in D.C. and you work for Uncle Sam, if you work for Uncle Sam you're in the military or you work civil service at the state levels, and if you work in a union, those are the jobs that pay equal pay.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, you're part of that vast array of women who don't make equal pay.
And we are having a struggle trying to get even $10.10 as a minimum wage, and it is women of all colors in the minimum wage industry that are hurting the most.
75% of all those minimum wage jobs.
75%. Wow.
And I watched. We went to speak all the organizations for 2 Democratic bills that came out of the Senate that would have raised the minimum wage and went to the House committees, and they lumped them both together. One would have put it up to 10-10 over a 3-year period. One would have instantly done 10-10. And they had people on both sides, the people for it, you know, I was one of those speaking for it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the points I made was that women made 77, 67, and 57 cents. And I said, and if you work in a restaurant job, you can make minimum wage of $2.13 to $2.89 an hour, depending on the restaurant, plus tips. And I said, if you work in a diner, which is $2.13, those women work their bodies to death, and they get $2.13 plus scant tips, because people that go to diners don't have a lot of money.
Yes.
And they like to go to talk. So they'd have to serve 2 services, and they get carpal tunnel syndrome out of it, and they'd have no health care for that. So if you're at the high-end restaurant, you do make a lot of, not a lot, but enough to get by.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a lot of work for $2.89 an hour. And then you get people who don't know that you make that. Most people don't know that if you work in a restaurant, you don't make minimum wage. So some of them don't tip very well, and which is very sad for the person.
Yes.
And one of the Republicans on the dais, all the people against putting minimum wage up were restaurant organizations.
Uh-huh.
And they all had women lobbyists. And you just looked at them like what you are doing to women. And one of the Republicans on the dais said to one of them, what about her argument about diners? Haven't some of these restaurants gone to ordering on a tablet? And I'm thinking to myself, if you're in a diner, your customers probably don't know how to use those tablets.
Yes.
So, and they would destroy them easily, and you're going to spend that kind of money when you can pay a woman $2.13 an hour to take that order?
Wow.
And, you know, it makes no sense. Their logic is just beyond belief.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. Is there one last thing you can tell us, Diana, to give us hope about this? I know you and other women like you are out there fighting for it, but I think that was one of your great points, that we have to get off the sofa, put down the remote, and handwrite a letter, make a telephone call, better yet, get your friends together, carpool, go talk to the people, as you said, in January and February in the General Assembly. But you take us out.
The elections are this fall. Get yourself down to... I'm not going to ask you to please don't go to the Republican headquarters. Go to the Democratic headquarters in your town and work. Go door to door. I know it's hard to do. It takes a lot of energy. But we're not going to change anything. And if, as women, if we don't get the ERA, we're going to be in a hurt. Young women say to me all the time that they don't need it, that all these laws covered. But remember, you have... These are laws. We want an amendment that protects those laws. Those laws can disappear tomorrow. The amendment can't.
There you go. That's the best possible way we can end, and we are speaking to men and women, and we are speaking to women of all colors, and we are speaking to the young who assume, because they are too young to remember some of the struggles, it isn't a gift that can't go away unless it's an amendment to the Constitution and a part of the law of the land. Thank you so much, Diana Igazcu, for being on the show today. She is the president of the National Women's Organization in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I am Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, hoping you'll become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. Thank you, Diana, for being on the show. Keep up the good fight. Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us in becoming one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. You know what's wrong with the world today? It's not just banks making certain we find enough breadcrumbs to keep us following, but not enough to indict the traitors at the end of the money trail. Thanks to recession perpetrators still holding stay-out-of-jail cards, America's good guys have just won another European victory. The gap between American income extremes is wider than that in Europe. Middle-class income in developed industrial Western European countries is closer to their top 1%. Than we are. So what's the solution to, you know what's wrong with the world today? Not just following or even making the money, nor by becoming single-issue voters against single-payer health care. The answer is in the wind. Using our buying power make going green more profitable than black gold. Corporatism's bottom-line greed is the motivating thrill that will transplant us from oil spills to lying down in green pastures. Keeping our enemies closer than our friends is wise, because knowledge is the people power that effects reformation and a better-off budget. So what's wrong with the world today? 1. Forgetting when we say government, we're saying us, not them. 2. Paying taxes to an IRS giving bonuses to employees who don't pay taxes. 3. Succumbing to stock market high-frequency traders' devaluation of us. 4. Ignoring an iceberg 6 times the size of Manhattan breaking off from a glacier while applauding intellectual embarrassment of 4 North Carolina Republicans insulting America's former educational superiority. 5. Being the audience who laughs at military gaze while electing climate change ostriches. 6. Paving the road from California drought to national food prices and scarcity of clean water for international conglomerates hiding behind smoked windows high above Lower Manhattan. 7. Shaming our inner good Samaritan by denying those in privatized prisons Nestle's thirst for privatized water and Shell Putin public finger. 8. Trending Colombia versus Colombia while banned affirmative action diminishes America by diminishing college applications from the likes of a Sonia Sotomayor. 9. Failing on Earth Day to embrace one day a year without a single consumer buying gas, fast food, prescriptions, cigarettes, and or walking or clicking our way into a bank. 10. Abandoning the real truth of the golden rule. If we allow those with the gold to make the rules, at least Let's remind them that we are the source of their gold. If we want accountable corporatism, responsible government, and acceptable reforms from the economic top 1% of the 1%, we have to stop buying from those who sold us out. Instead, let's question how Wall Street plans to profit next from our hunger and thirst on a raped Mother Earth. According to insiders Merrill Lynch Global and Bank of America, there is a perfect storm coming for drinking water. From the gang that helped eliminate 40% of the world's wealth comes a report that water scarcity is a pressing people and planet issue. Really? Additionally, they note 768 million Earthlings have no access to clean drinking water and 2.5 billion are without proper sanitation. Still want a alcohol transformation of clean water into vodka or rum and coke, brothers? When corporate opponents to climate change science admit that water is neither a free nor limitless resource, they've already calculated how to reap financial rewards from scarcity. Buyers beware of false advertising from double-crossing American crossroads, phony patriots. What if by the year 2030, the demand for water and food exceed Earth's ability to supply? Will corporatism finally stop oil wars in favor of H2O wars? While there are a number of drop-in-the-bucket public policy solutions from the impotent EPA, what about private corporatism's depletion of our food, energy, and water supply? What's wrong with the world today is it's reaching a boiling point, and we're still listening to those fanning the flames. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.
Thank you for continuing to listen, support, and share The Reasonable Voice with your friends. We are now accepting offers for your company or organization to advertise with us, and welcome new sponsors for The Reasonable Voice. To apply, please email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com.
Thank you for joining us today and every day, and recommending us to all your friends, both online and offline. And please download our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.